Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Joel Embiid podcast. Oh, wait, sorry. No, the NBA podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about, of course, Joel Embiid and his historic night. We will also touch on Robert Covington getting paid, why Dallas hates Nerlens Noel so much, and whether Boston is now the favorite to make it out of the East. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Joining me today, as always, is my co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, my son just told me the other day, with great shame in his voice, unnecessary shame, that he did not want to play basketball. And then he started crying because he felt he let me down, which of course he didn't.
Buddy.
So, but like he didn't let me down at all, but I you know, I had to swallow it a little bit.
Sure.
Because you know, that hurt. It stung. But at least like, he's like, I'm sticking with football and, you know, actual football, not what you guys play.
Right. Which is ridiculous. Right.
So at least he's sticking to one sport. And then I looked at him and said, that's fine. That's fine. As long as you just promise me one thing, just try to be the best player you can possibly be at whatever sport you decide to go in. Okay, Dad. So I'm going to look forward to having the new Lionel Messi, you know, as son.
There we go. That's good parenting. Well done.
Thank you. So it's what every parent should do, basically. Yeah. It's normal parenting, but in today's world, it's become good parenting with just horrifying.
Right. Yeah. Very, very high bar we've set today. Before we get underway, Mort, I know you saw Justice League. You want to give us your quick review of it?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit mixed because it was fun, but the fun parts for me were, you know, the areas where it was a little bit dark and gritty. But the thing is, if you like Marvel, you are going to like Justice League because they have unfortunately buckled to the fan pressure and become much more like Marvel with a lot of, you know, crammed in jokes. So when I see a lot of people going, oh, Justice League sucks, and they start to argue why Marvel movies are better, I'm just like, shut up. It's the exact same formula right now. So you can't have it both ways. It's just not, it doesn't work like that. I will say this, go watch it, everyone, because even though it's a little bit more like Marvel, I have to assume by talking to you, Brian, and everyone else I know that, you know, people like fun, and this is fun. There are a lot of, you know, jokes in it, and there are a lot of, you know, positivity. Superman is actually smiling a lot more and having fun while kicking ass.
Oh, okay.
So, if you like that type of thing, then go watch it, absolutely. And, I mean, I've been waiting 25 years for having the Justice League on the big screen. I really have. 25 years. So, you can probably, you know, tell that I had great expectations going in. Mm. And even though I was kind of disappointing in the fact that they went that humoristic because, you know, of all the fan pressure, I still left the theater very excited.
Okay.
Because this is a movie I can take my son in and watch, even though it's like PG-13 or whatever, and he's six, because this is nonstop action. He won't even have time to just, you know, yank on my arm sleeve and go, Dad, explain what happens. No, he's going to be entertained throughout 2 hours because, good Lord, action from start to finish. So it's very, very entertaining. I think you'll love it.
I'm not sure whether to be insulted by that. I think so.
Oh, no, I meant that in a positive way because you mentioned that you thought that Batman v Superman was sort of dull at some times. Yeah. You felt it was drawn out. So that's what I'm alluding to.
Okay.
This one is not at all drawn out. You know, nonstop plot advancement, and it just moves. It feels like, if I have to compare, like Game of Thrones for the first, you know, three or four seasons was very, very slow. Mm-hmm. So that's like Batman v Superman.
Okay.
And then Justice League is like this, the latest season, a couple seasons back, where they just went everything just flew off the wall. It was right. very fun.
Where yeah. all of a sudden they could like time travel between different lands and in the matter of a yeah. day. Yeah. Cool.
Basically.
Okay.
So yeah. And just one more thing. I just got to mention it. Aquaman is fantastic. Jason Momoa is just doing one hell of a job as Aquaman. I kind of expected it going in, but I've seen a lot of people being afraid that he's too bro.
Okay.
And he's actually not. Like, the trailers don't do him justice. Because, yeah, he's bro, but he's not, like, obnoxious bro.
Mm. All right, there we go. So, my wife was supposed to see it Tuesday. She said the line was too long, so she left. So, she did ask.
That's good news.
Yeah, so.
That's good news.
Yeah, it was like an early release of some sort. I'm not really sure. I was working. But I'm sure I will see it over the Thanksgiving holiday, so.
Good. Then remember to stick around. There are two post-credit scenes.
Oh wow. They just totally ripped off Marvel, huh?
Yeah, they did. There's one like mid-post, and there's one at the end. And the one in the end, the final one,
uh-huh.
I shat bricks, Brian.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Cool. Well, that's good advice. Thanks, Mort, for our weekly superhero recap. I think we have to take a break for a few weeks until Star Wars comes out. And then at that point, we have to be very careful not to spoil anything, because... for obvious reasons, I think we would be thrown off the planet if we did.
So we could go join Rey?
Yeah.
Because I would do that.
I'm cool with that.
She's wonderful. Yeah.
All right, let's get into actual basketball. We got to start with the Sixers. First of all, if you guys didn't see the Lakers-Sixers game on Wednesday night, and judging by basketball Twitter, that applies to roughly none of you. But if you did not see it, go watch highlights of Joel Embiid. 46 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists, 7 blocks. Never before done in recorded history, at least since they started recording blocks back in the early 70s. I'm sure Wilt probably had a game or two like that in the 50s and 60s. But it was an absolute clinic. He and Ben Simmons just did whatever they wanted on the court while the rest of the team could not hit an open shot for the life of them until the last 2 minutes of the game. But we need to talk about Bob Covington, who was the big story on Wednesday heading into the game. He just, you know, we've been teasing at this for the last couple months, saying, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Sixers left $15 million in cap space, and they, you know, they were eligible to renegotiate and extend his contract on November 15th. Lo and behold, November 15th rolls around. Boom, there's the announcement. He has a 4-year extension, and I need to explain quickly the details of this, because Twitter the last couple days has made me realize that some people don't quite understand, and it's not totally your fault, because Woj and Shams, totally. well, Woj and Shams did report it in a very confusing way. Like, the headline on ESPN says 4-year, $62 million extension.
Right.
And I think,
and that's wrong.
Right. And like, I'm pretty sure Yahoo's did as well. So if you want like the nitty gritty detail, go check out Derek Bodner on The Athletic. He has the best breakdown of it that I've seen. Bobby Marks as well actually had the right details. So what they did was, he was making about $1.6 million this year. They bumped his salary up by more than $15 million. Then, over the following 4 years, he will earn roughly $45 million. So, in essence, it's a 4-year extension, and he's going to earn $62 million, but $62 million includes this season. After this season, it's basically a 4-year, $45 million contract. So, when I compared all of those, his contract on Twitter, to Evan Turner, Tim Hardaway Jr., Alan Crabb, that's why I use the 4-year figures throughout, because... over the following 4 years, $45 million. I mean, I was shocked that they got him at that price. What do you think about that deal?
I think Robert Covington might just get screwed on his second consecutive deal. This is the second bargain contract for the Sixers with Covington.
Yeah.
I mean, look, let's just break down the numbers, because after this season, he's earning about $16.7 million this year because of the bump up, which mm-hmm. doesn't matter because the season is underway. You wouldn't need the cap space anyway. And people are saying, well, he's still getting paid $62 million. Yeah, he is, but not really. It's not going to affect the cap in, you know, to that extent, because Philly aren't free agent, you know, players right now.
Right.
They're not. They cleared those. They held the cap space open for Covington specifically.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, who would you have gotten anyway? You got JJ Redick who fit in. Like,
yep.
Who would you have gotten? Like, you wouldn't have made sense. So his salary next year is going to come out to like 10, and then the following season is going to be 10.8, and then 11.6, and then 12.4 million. Now remember, this would have been a decent deal under the old cap.
Yeah.
But this is the new cap, so this is extra crispy.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about what would... I estimate that to be around between 8 and 10 million on the old cap. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a little bit less. So this is a fantastic deal. Absolutely. I'm crazy about it.
Yeah. It feels like the new version of Jay Crowder's contract that made him one of the best bargains in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. Now Covington is going to take that title for this new cap threshold. And as Bodner pointed out, I mean, yes, like... 4 years, $45 million is far below market. But if he didn't renegotiate, he was only going to make $1.6 million. So as Bodner said, if he was going to match $62 million over the next 5 years and he didn't renegotiate, he would have had to get a four-year, $60 million-plus deal next summer. And as we've right. talked about before, you know, we're not the only ones who have noticed this, but A... cap space already dried up last summer. The contracts that were handed out in 2016, there were far fewer, you know, totally ridiculous contract figures in 2017. This coming summer, even fewer teams have cap space. So,
right.
it, you know, the pinch might be even more severe. And you've got a bunch of, like, high-profile guys on the market, including LeBron James, Isaiah Thomas, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins. Like, if you're not a top-tier superstar... there is the chance that you get squeezed out. Now, you could argue, you know, yeah, like, Chicago is going to have a lot of cap space. Atlanta is going to have a lot of cap space. Phoenix is going to have a lot of cap space. Like, yeah. Robert Covington is a guy who probably could get overpaid and go to a rebuilding team. And, like, you know, there is a chance that he would have gotten more money in the free agent market. But if he wanted a $15 million raise right now and he's happy with, you know, like, maybe... Philly has engendered loyalty by taking a chance on him, and now he's playing with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and he sees what this team can become. And, like, he's, you know, if he's happy, like, all the power to him. The guy was an undrafted free agent. Like, I think probably never in his wildest dreams did he think he was going to make $60 million over the next 5 years. So
that's a good point. That's a very good point. Like, he's been used to earning around $1 million, $1.5 million
mm-hmm.
over the last 4 years of his career. So getting this bump right now and knowing that you're earning double figure salary for the next 4 years, that has to be a huge get for him alone.
Like, yeah.
Man, he can go buy a proper house now.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. So I think, you know, now this begs the question, like, that the Sixers have their core financially locked in. Covington signed to an extension. Embiid signed to an extension. Simmons is on the second year of his rookie deal. Markelle Fultz is on the first year of his rookie deal. Dario Saric is on the second year of his rookie deal. Like, all of their big name guys outside of JJ Redick and Amir Johnson are locked up.
Right.
They're going to have... I've seen various figures about how much cap space they could have. Bodner says about $30.8 million. Assuming they renounce the qualifying offer for Nick Stauskas, which they're going to do. So So I'm going to use that number because I trust him. He's a good, you know, a good cap guy. He's one of the best Sixers beat writer there is. So he pays attention to this stuff. So $30.8 million, assuming the $101 million salary cap projection for next season holds true, that means the Sixers can squeeze a guy in that 7 to 9 year max range. So, you know, the guys who can get 30% of the cap,
yeah,
they could squeeze that guy in and not have to deal, you know, not have to, like, find a taker for Jared Bayless or something like that. If they go after a guy in the 10 plus year range, say a LeBron James, they'd have to get a little more creative. So we're having this, we're going back and forth at DMs the other night about this. You know, it seems like Philly is setting itself up to be a big player in free agency, whether in 2018 or 2019. Obviously, LeBron is the big prize in 2018. He's, you know, Ben Simmons is a clutch sports client, so there's that connection. Ben and LeBron have worked out in the past. You know, maybe everyone says LeBron wants to go to the Lakers, but, like, maybe he watched that Lakers-Sixers game the other night and saw what Embiid did and was like, oh, shit. You know, maybe I don't need to go to the West Coast and have to play the Warriors before the finals. Maybe I can go hang out with the boys in Philly, hang out with my boy Ben Simmons, just have Joel Embiid feed him all game and, you know, go to the finals then. 2019, Klay Thompson's a free agent. Jimmy Butler's a free agent. So if you're the Sixers, which of those guys do you think is the best fit? Like, who would you be saving that cap space for?
Klay Thompson. As you know, because we DM'd
him. Right, yeah.
But yeah. Here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing. LeBron is LeBron.
Yeah.
But if you sign him, yeah, he might have that idea, you know, hey, I'm going to go chill with my boy Ben Simmons. But at the same time, his boy Ben Simmons is going to get ignored.
Yeah.
Basically, he's going to see less court time. He's not going to see as much time on the ball, which means his development is probably going to stagnate a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think is a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, you have plenty of ball handlers, like Markelle Fultz when he comes back from the death, you know, like Superman. you know, he's going to handle the ball. Ben Simmons can handle the ball. Hell, Joel Embiid can handle the ball. Darius Saric is an excellent ball handler and passer.
Mm-hmm.
I would even argue that Robert Covington has gotten better in that regard as well.
Yeah, he has.
So there are plenty of players available on that roster who can handle the basketball. I am not seeing that as any lack.
Mm-hmm.
As such, getting a guy in like Klay, who is primarily spotting up and just does not need a lot of time on the basketball. I don't have these stats in front of me, but I would love to see how much he actually holds the basketball in his hands, like for how long a game.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't be surprised if he has one of the lowest rates in the league compared to volume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands a lot. Like, it's just, it moves and he shoots. That's it.
Right.
So if you can get a guy who comes in and averages 20 points a game just off of that action, mm-hmm. while being a very solid defender on the other end, yeah, you go for that, because then you still optimize Markelle, you optimize Ben, you optimize Dario and Joel, and it just, oh, the fit is just beautiful.
Yeah. To your point there, he averages 2.29 seconds per touch. Klay does.
That's so little.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, wow. Yeah, his value is as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter, and, you know, he's a good defender too. Like, to me, I'm torn between Paul George and Klay, and I think you're probably right that Klay is the best fit. Just
of course, given. I am.
Of course, I just like the idea of George, like a George Robert Covington wing combo, is just so goddamn lethal in terms of length and defense, especially with Simmons and Embiid, and then Fultz, who's 6'4 with a, I think, 6'10 wingspan, something like that. Like, you know, you hear all this talk about Milwaukee wanting to build with length and defense. Like, the Sixers would be just as long, if not longer, with a Paul George in there. But, you know, Klay is also, what, he's 6'6? I mean, he's a good defender too, so it's tough.
But, and strong.
Yeah. And, like, I think there is something to say. Like, he does bring championship pedigree. Like, he could come into that locker room. You know, the Warriors are most likely going to win at least one, if not two, rings in the next 2 years. So he'd be coming in there with 3 or 4 rings, dropping those on the table like Pat Riley, and saying, like, hey, guys, I know what it takes to get there. Like, let me take you over into the promised land. Here's what we need to do. Like, here's why you guys have been falling short. Here's where we can continue to improve. Let me impart my veteran wisdom onto you. So, yeah.
And then by the 11th hour, he'll go, oh, shit, I just realized I have no reason to leave Golden State.
Right.
I'm outie.
Right. Right. Therein lies the problem. But hopefully he gets priced out of Golden State. Yeah, I mean, the larger point is that I know it sounds so ridiculous to say, like, I don't want LeBron James to join my team. Like, who says that? But, like, rare circumstance, I just think there are better fits. Not only because, I mean, he would be one of the 10-plus-year guys, so you'd have to find a taker for Jared Bayless or something like that. You probably have to attach at least a second-round pick. If not, like, maybe you have to give away Timothy Luau-Cabarrot, who's actually been playing well, or Justin Anderson, or Furkan Korkmaz. You could just squeeze a George or Clay in there without having to shake up anything else, which I think is valuable. And as you said, like, I don't want to take Ben Simmons off the ball. You're wasting Ben Simmons if you take him off the ball. Like, that is his strength. LeBron can shoot, but he's not as good of a shooter as Klay Thompson. This is not a controversial take here. Like, Klay Thompson is a better three-point shooter than LeBron James. Yes, the problem, or, like, you can never have too many ball handlers, but as you said, like, I just think, I mean, seeing J.J. Redick in this system, you almost need a guy like that next to Simmons and Embiid. You need someone who can just come running off screens and just fire right as he catches the ball. And, like, Clay's would be a souped-up version of J.J. on both ends of the floor. So, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see what they do with this cap space in the next 2 years, whether they, you know, use it next summer because they're afraid Clay is just going to, you know, Golden State's going to figure out a way to keep all four guys, or whether they re-sign JJ on another 1 year big money deal and just go all in on Clay or Jimmy. Because after that, then you have to start worrying about Simmons' extension, Dario, you know, if you're going to keep him long-term. All your guys start running out after 2019. So you really, it's the next 2 years where they need to strike. But, you know, they're 8-6. They came up, I think, 10 of their first 14 games, something like that, were on the road. They beat Houston. They beat the Clippers. They beat Jazz with Jazz when they had Gobert. And, you know, the Sixers didn't have Embiid. Like, they're taking promising steps toward being a free agent destination, especially if Embiid stays healthy and continues playing like the way he did against the Lakers the other night. It was just, that was one of the most impressive dominant performances I've seen from any NBA player, probably since like the 2016 finals.
Here's the thing with Embiid's game. That type of production he had against Los Angeles could actually end up being somewhat pedestrian for him down the road.
Yeah.
He's still young.
Yeah.
That's the insane
part. I know.
And it didn't even look like he was asserting himself, like, to the point where he was seeking out these things.
Right.
Like, it came within a flow of things.
Yeah.
The little herky-jerky move he had with the Eurostep. God.
Yeah.
I mean, was wonderful.
Or the dream shake.
The dream shake as well. Like, and it just, it all comes so natural to him. When he sees someone, he reads the defender so masterfully, and he's, what, 22, 23?
Mm-hmm.
23?
I
mean, good lord.
Yeah.
Imagine when he's 26 and 20 or 27.
I know.
He stays healthy, obviously.
Right. That's always, it always comes back to that. But yeah, I mean, he's 23 years old. He's been playing basketball for like 7 or 8 years, and he's already doing that. Like,
that's ridiculous. There's still time for my son then.
Yeah, there you go.
So if he changes his mind, I'm just going to go, hey, look at Joel Embiid.
Right. Yeah, you just need your son to grow up to be 7'2 and 280 pounds.
Well, the 280 pounds I can do.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Before we do,
okay.
I have a number for you right here.
Yeah.
51,000. That's minutes. LeBron James in regular season and playoffs so far in his career. 51,000.
Yeah.
And that's not counting preseason. That's not counting all-star games. That's not counting international competition.
Right.
That's just regular season and playoff. He's going to be 33.
Yeah.
That's another thing that you have to take into consideration when looking at LeBron. Even if you're the Lakers.
Yeah.
Like, whoever you are, that's a lot of miles. Now, to LeBron's credit, he's shown that so far it means tits.
Right. Because, yeah.
Right. But he's leading the league in minutes again for the second year in a row. And I am just sitting here thinking, you're playing with fire.
Yeah.
When you're doing that to him. Like, he has to go down to like 30 to 40 minutes a game.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. And if he keeps getting these types of minutes and these deep playoff runs, you know, at some point his body is going to buckle down. Maybe not like a severe injury, but then he's going to miss games here and there. And, you know, he's, you know, pinched something in his back, or his knee starts to swell up, or his elbow starts to hurt a little bit, whatever.
Right.
But these nagging injuries are going to come as a result of this down the line. Like, unless he is a robot, which I just so far can't get confirmed by anyone, even though I,
right.
I try.
There is a 70% chance that he is a robot, so it might not matter. Yeah. I mean, he, to his credit, I think he probably, like, takes, I guess Kobe also did these ridiculous things, but, like, he's got to be taking better care of his body than almost anyone in NBA history, if not anyone. Like, he is
right
unprecedented in his, you know, his way of using science to really maximize his recovery. So, like, maybe what happened to athletes, hell, 5-10 years ago, like, maybe they just aren't going to break down as quickly, or maybe they do, and maybe LeBron's just the one rare case where, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, he's just going to play this way until he's 45, and we're all going to be richer for it. But that is a fair concern, and that factors into my thinking as well with his fit, you know, in Philly. Like, all of this, Embiid's 23, Simmons, you know, Simmons, Fultz, Saric, they're all in their early 20s. Clay and Paul George, by the time they're free agents, will be like 28, 29. Like, they'll be more in line. They'll still be a couple years older, but, like, more in line with the development curve of the Sixers.
Right.
Whereas LeBron, it's like, you know, every year, he's going to soon turn into the Tim Duncan, where, like, every year you think he's going to slow down, and then he turns 38 and he's still putting up triple doubles, and you're like, oh, okay. He's never going to lose it. But, you know, Father Time is the one thing that remains undefeated in this game. So at some point, point, he is bound to slow down. Whether it happens 2 years from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now is anyone's guess. But at some point, it will happen again, unless he is actually a robot.
Actually, a robot.
Yeah.
I actually listened to George Carl. His new book, Furious George.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listened to it on audiobook, and he suggested, you know, that a lot of these guys who went to Germany and stuff, they didn't go there to get sauerkraut. And, like, he more or less hinted that these guys are going there to get, like, the latest treatment, and
right,
you know, that can't be detected.
Interesting.
Obviously, LeBron's name has always been the rumor mill, but you and I have never talked about this.
Yeah.
Like, where do you stand on that issue? Do you think LeBron ever juiced?
I mean, I honestly don't know. I have no sense of it. It would be, like, reckless of me to speculate how many NBA players are actually doing it. I will say, talk to Andrew Bynum about how well those German procedures work sometimes.
But yeah, but I mean, I guess I don't think so. I think LeBron is just the obvious target.
Right.
Like,
right.
He's so big that he obviously, people were like, oh, he couldn't have gotten that big. Look at his, when he was 18 and then now. Yeah, people grow with age. They fill out.
Right. Like, look at Giannis.
Giannis as well.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, come on. It's just, it's natural progression. And then he just added a little element of bodybuilding to it, and
right,
got a little Schwarzenegger all over it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I kind of found that indirect accusation of George Karl hilarious, and also a little bit typical, because again, hey, the book is called Furious George. Like,
right.
Yeah. Right. It's just kind of interesting because, I mean, when you look at how long he's playing LeBron, and again, 51,000 minutes.
Yeah.
It's uncanny.
Yeah. The speculation is understandable, at least, but I'm with you. Yeah. I'm going to just cover my ears and close my eyes and pretend that no NBA player is on any sort of performance enhancing supplement.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's the preferable route. So let's stick with the Atlantic Division for a second. We need to talk about the Boston Celtics, who have now won 14 straight games. Thursday night, they knock off the Warriors at home 92-88. They survive. You know, the Warriors did their typical, like, let them hang around the first half, come out in the third quarter, and just wipe them off the floor. Except Boston actually survived that, battled back, came out with a close victory. Every time the Warriors lose, I feel like we say the same thing. Who cares? It's not May. We're not worried. So let's focus on it from Boston's angle.
Right.
They started the year 0-2. Gordon Hayward suffers an ankle injury on opening night. And at the time, we figure, oh, that's it. You know, like, the Celtics looked like they were posed to maybe challenge the Cavs for Eastern Conference supremacy. But without Hayward, how can they? 14 wins later, where do you stand on that? Are they now the favorite to represent the East in the finals?
I think they are now, because when they came, Golden State visited them. It's a road game for the Warriors, but still, the Dubs had that game circled.
Yeah.
Like, they know that the team is on a winning streak, mm-hmm. and they would love nothing more than to tear that away.
Yep.
So them not succeeding in that is a testament to the intensity that Boston played with.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it without Gordon Hayward is just so impressive. I mean, the connection between we talked about this, Kyrie and Al Horford, like, their connection is just insane. Jason Tatum is a 10-year veteran at this point, and Jaylen Brown. I mean, I wasn't fortunate enough to watch the game because Jesse Blanchard of B-Ball Breakdown spoiled it for me.
Right. Like,
yeah, because I'm a little bit ahead of your time schedule, and I wake up when you guys are going to bed and you all are talking about it, and he sent out emails to the entire B-Ball Breakdown staff, and thank you, Jesse. That's nice. And I'm not one of those guys who go into a game like when I know who wins and then stay with the same focus. It's just, but from what I gathered and from what I did see, Jaylen Brown overcame like the loss of his best friend and just played out of his mind, which was amazing. And he's been solid as well. Like, I mean, Boston is owning everything right now, and that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I still feel their summer could have been better. I'm not leaving that one behind quite yet.
Right.
But I'm willing to concede that I am on the verge of being wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think we said this last episode when we were talking about, you know, the awards races, and we were talking about Danny Ainge in particular, and how there's no way we could have known what kind of a leap both that Brown was going to take, and then also Tatum, not even a leap, just that he was, you know, he came in with the perception of being NBA ready, but like, did anyone expect this kind of NBA ready? Like, you know, I remember you had the Celtics, I want to say you had them pretty high on your league pass rankings because you were excited to see those two guys. And then I was like, well, that was before the whole the Hayward injury. And I was like, well, you know, are they going to get those minutes? Like, Hayward's going to be playing 35 minutes a game. I don't think we're going to be seeing those guys that much.
I think that was Sarah, actually.
Oh, she had them
because
high?
I had them pretty low. I think you guys were after me because I had them that low.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought it was relatively low as well, because I just didn't think we were going to see those guys. And now, you know, like, they have really proven, not only are they ready, like, you know, we kept saying with Boston, they're split between win now and win later, because they have all these, like, all these guys they keep drafting with the Brooklyn Nets picks, who we thought, like, okay, yeah, Tatum, Brown, the 2018 pick before they traded it for Kyrie, those guys are going to be the cornerstone of their future. But then you also had, back in the summer, you had Isaiah Thomas, you had Al Horford, you had Jay Crowder, you had a bunch of guys who were win now. So it's like they were kind of splitting the difference. Like, they had to both stay competitive now and build toward the future. But now we're seeing, like, they didn't need to split anything. Like, Tatum and Brown are ready to compete now. Like, they held their own against the world champions. I mean, it was, again, it's one regular season game. I'm not going to, like, jump to conclusions and say the Celtics are going to beat the Warriors in the finals, because I still don't think that's true. But,
agreed.
You know, it's hard not to be impressed with what this Celtics team has done, especially in the face of adversity. And I'm with you, Mort. I think right now, I don't know how you can have any other team as the favorite in the East. I'm not saying they're going to win the East. It's a long season. Injuries can change things. We still haven't seen the Cavaliers with Isaiah Thomas. That can change things. You know, Washington and Toronto are both playing well. They're both 9-5. The Pistons are no fluke. Like, they've proven that they're in for the long haul. This Andre Drummond revival is for real. The Bucks have won 4 straight with Eric Bledsoe now. Like, they, you know, they look legit. Like, I think the moral of the story is that the Eastern Conference is much more up for grabs than we anticipated heading into the year.
Agreed. I will say this, though, and this is an important note. Boston's offense has been slightly concerning.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense is what wins games right now.
Yeah.
And come playoff time, they are going to have to deliver on both ends of the court.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at, you know, their effective field goal percentage right now is 26th in the league,
mm-hmm.
but their opponent effective field goal percentage is like first. Like, they are leading the league in allowing the least efficient shots. So I'm on the Celtics wagon, mostly because they're winning and it seems like they're finding the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm also concerned. There are some elements there where I'm not completely convinced yet. But at the same time, that stays true for Cleveland, who still can't guard a freaking chair.
Right, right.
I mean, look, the chair that Yi Yan Yan played against alone back in the 2007 pre-draft camp, that thing would get a triple-double against the Cavs right now.
Right.
So, I mean, there are concerns on both sides. It's just a matter of what do you trust more?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, they are 22nd right now in offensive rating. They're leading the league in defensive rating. They're allowing 95.4 points per 100 possessions, which is, I think that's like 4 points ahead of where the number one team was last year. So whether they can keep this up is anyone's guess. But, they always say defense wins championships. Like, if they... I'm less concerned about a team with a good defense and a bad offense than I am with a good offense and a bad defense, which is Boston and Cleveland right now.
But then again, you also have the saying, great offense beats great defense every single time.
Yeah.
So we can sit here and sling out like so many old sayings gauge some sort of analytical answer to what's more accurate.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I bottom line, it's going to be interesting when the playoffs start to see which of these teams finds it easier to overcome their weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of sitting here going, could the playoffs just start now?
Yeah, for real.
Because we really have to go through the whole season. Yeah, we're 16 games in and I'm like, oh, we have 66 more to go. Or no, 60. Yeah,
yeah.
Something along those lines.
65 or more for pretty much every team. Yeah. But if the playoffs started now, the New York Knicks would be in the playoffs and the Cavs would not be. So,
poor sink god in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Sign me the hell up, though.
Right now, it would be... Oh, it would actually be the Raptors and the Knicks in round one. It would be the Wizards and the Sixers. So, I mean, Embiid in the playoffs? That'd be pretty lit. And then Milwaukee, Detroit, which was actually a fun game the other night. And Boston, Orlando. Where, Orlando is starting to sink back to, they're still above 500, but they've lost 3 straight. They're starting to lose some of that early season luster that they had. So the Knicks are a surprise. Miami and Charlotte, we both pegged as pretty easy playoff teams, and they both struggled out of the gate.
Yeah.
So it does seem like Detroit, I think, you know, barring injury, it's already looking like they're a pretty safe playoff entrant, but it seems like there's going to be room for another surprise team, whether it's Philly Orlando, Indiana, hell, maybe the Knicks to crash the playoffs, and maybe Miami and Charlotte misses out. Or hell, your Brooklyn Nets, Mort, they're only a couple games out.
Yeah, and look, I'm glad you brought them up because we need to kind of edit our thing now because now
D'Angelo
Russell went down, yep. Which was just that was gut-wrenching because now I can't even say Freddie 5 anymore.
No, well, it sounds like he's going to be back. They keep saying sooner rather than later, but we've received no word as to what the injury is. And anytime you say knee injury in sports, I immediately get nervous. So
right.
Fingers crossed he'll be back soon and he'll be healthy. And that's actually, on the note of knee injuries, that's the perfect transition into Utah and Rudy Gobert in particular. Because the last time we recorded was last Friday. That night, Dion Waiters took a tumble into Gobert's knee. It looked like we averted disaster because he came back into that game that night. Then he missed the game Saturday night against Brooklyn, I believe. And then Sunday, the Jazz announced he's going to be out for at least the next 4 weeks with that knee injury. So the Jazz, they're kind of in a tailspin right now. It's been, all season for them has been a slog on offense. Like, they just cannot score consistently. But at least they had their defense to fall back on. Unfortunately, in their last 7 games, they are now 1-6. Their lone win coming against Brooklyn. I guess the first question we need to address quickly. Gobert accused Waiters. He said that was a dirty play. Basically, like, Waiters dove for the ball, but the ball was going to the left. Gobert's knee was on the right. It seemed like Waiters took a strange path toward the ball because he went right for Gobert's knee. So do you think it was an intentional thing from Waiters, or do you think it was just like one of those split-second things that looks worse on replay, but when you're in the moment, you know, that's just how these things happen.
So you're asking me to add to the insane amounts of micro-analysms that were on Twitter that night?
Yeah. Jazz Twitter has taken... They've taken that one and run with it.
I'm not sure I agree with Jazz Twitter there. I mean, I get that there was a bit of confusion given the path that Waiters was in.
Right.
But I've seen that play probably 50 times now. I cannot find any logical way of explaining how it should have been intentional.
Yeah.
It just seems his body is already falling and he just didn't have control of it. And it happened. Like, let me ask you this. If that had been Wayne Ellington and not Dion Waiters, had we had that discussion?
It's a good point.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, but it's probably at least less loaded than it is because it's Waiters. That's a fair point.
It drives narrative.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
Yeah. So the other question then with the Jazz is, they moved Donovan Mitchell in the starting lineup. Rodney Hood's now coming off the bench. Both are playing well in their new roles, but it hasn't resulted in wins. You know, if Gobert, let's say he's back by the middle of December, you're still looking at, 15 games or so that he's about to miss?
Yeah.
Do you think the Jazz are basically out of the playoff race already?
Oh, it's so early. I mean, this just doesn't look good. They're 6-9 right now, and Gobert missing that much time. It's just going to dig them a hole further, and given that it's the Western Conference, I mean, I'm inclined to say yes, but it's so early that I can't force myself to go out on that limb quite yet. But it appears that way is the political answer that I'm going to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not looking good. I mean, their one saving grace is their upcoming schedule, at least in the next week. They're in the midst of a 4-game road trip. They lost to the Knicks on Wednesday. They're at Brooklyn on Friday, at Orlando Saturday, at Philly Monday, and then Chicago next Wednesday.
At home.
Yeah, but like Orlando and Philly aren't pushovers anymore. Chicago,
nope.
That's a W. But like, after that, it gets real. Like, Milwaukee, Denver, Clippers, Pelicans, Wizards, Thunder, Rockets, Bucks, again the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
Then Celtics, Cavs, Rockets, Thunder, Spurs, Thunder, Nuggets, Warriors, Cavs. Like,
yeah, it's just that important stretch he's out.
Right, like, exactly. Yeah. It comes down to if he's out for 4 weeks and he's back, you know, he comes back December 15th when they go through, like, that gauntlet of teams that we expect to be, like, conference final contenders. And they steal a couple wins there, then maybe they have a chance. But if he's out through the first of the year, that schedule is just so unforgiving. It's hard to see them making up the ground they're going to need to make, especially, you know, given it's just like the West just has so many good teams. Like, you can't afford these slip ups, and it sucks. Like, it's, you know, it's through no fault of their own, but without Gobert, like, they don't have their defense to fall back on. And their offense is just so, I mean, they're 26th right now in offensive rating. Like, they just cannot figure out a way to get consistent offense. Ricky Rubio was hot at first to start the year. He's cooled off considerably, and now he's dealing with an Achilles injury, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
but we knew that wasn't going to last. Like, let's be real for a second.
Yeah.
Like, the Rubio hype when he was just average offensively, more or less, was just small sample alert all the way through.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not sure why anyone is kind of surprised at the fact that he came back down to earth. It's Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful passer, wonderful playmaker, terrific defender, all those things, but a scorer he is not.
Right. Right. And I remember, like, even during that hot stretch, like, I want to say Dan Clayton, one of the Jazz guys who writes for B-Ball Breakdown, among other places, like, he was really pouring cold water on that, whereas some other Jazz people were like, well, maybe this is just the new Rubio. And he's like, we've got a 7-year sample size. Like, he's coming yeah. back to earth, and he's going to, I mean, now he's shooting 37.3% from the field, 25.7% from deep. That's Ricky Rubio.
And 5.5 assists to 3.6 turnovers, which isn't great.
Right, yeah. That's I mean, that's probably, I don't even care about the shooting splits because that's just who he is. Like, he's had 1 year where he shot above 40% from the field, but he's never averaged fewer than 7 assists per game. So the fact he's only averaging 5.5 now, like, that, if I'm a Jazz fan, that's what I'm most concerned about. I don't care that he's not scoring. Like, you've got other guys who can score. Do you think more there's anything they can do more in terms of, like, shuffling their lineups to generate more offense?
Well, I was gonna say unleash Donovan Mitchell, but he has been unleashed.
Yeah.
Dude is leading the team in field goal attempts for a night by playing just 27 minutes a game. So, no, I mean, you might be right that they should just kind of tank this year, just give as many minutes as they can to, like, the Tony Bradleys and Donovan Mitchells of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Just let the kids develop and then see if they get lucky in the lottery. I mean, good lord, Luka Doncic in Utah?
Yeah.
With a healthy Gobert next year?
Right.
Woof.
Yeah, I mean,
why not? Why not get in on that?
Right, or Bagley, or, I mean, there's a bunch of guys up there that could be good
fits.
Yeah, but
Doncic specifically for Utah, though.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
They need a scorer and a distributor and someone who can make shit happen.
Right.
And Doncic makes shit happen.
And also, we want to spare him from going to Chicago. So, prayers up that he winds up there. Yeah.
Oh, we should just, let's just have a quick little side note with draft talk. Have you seen DeAndre Ayton play so far?
Yeah, he's,
holy tomato.
Yeah. I know. I'm officially worried. If Boston gets that guy with, they can get the Lakers pick from Philly if it falls between 2 and 5. So if,
So
if Boston gets him, I'm officially concerned about the Celtics as a legit long-term contender more than I am already.
Yeah. Yep. His frame is ridiculous.
Yeah. The big man's back. Like, remember,
the big man is bad.
Remember a couple years ago when people were saying it's going to go extinct? Like, no. Anthony Davis is here. Towns, Embiid, Porzingis, Jokic, Ayton next year. I mean, Boogie's a little older, but hell yeah, but like, we're not going to discount him.
Yeah. I can't call anyone old who's younger than me.
that's reason. I like that rule. Yeah. Let's move on to another big man who has not been having such great time lately, Nerlens Noel. So we thought it was weird in the summer when, you know, he turns down the 4-year $70 million deal. He says he wants a max deal. Mark Cuban laughs at him, pulls the 4-year $70 million offer off the table. He doesn't get a contract offer from anyone else, signs the qualifying offer. We figure, all right, he's going to play well in Dallas for 1 year. He'll gamble on himself. He'll get a big money offer next summer. It's not looking so good for his contract push anymore. He started the year well. In the first game against Atlanta, he had 16 points, 11 rebounds, and just under 20 minutes.
Mm.
The last four games, he's played 6 minutes. He did not play. He played 2 minutes, and then he played 5 minutes. Rick Carlisle has said he needs to earn his minutes, and that Salah Mezri is earning them over him. I mean,
that was the quote I was looking for.
Yeah, like, as if he wasn't already getting the hell out of Dallas at the first possible opportunity, based on what happened with his contract talks this year. Like, Carlisle's handling of him, I feel like it's already sealed the deal. Like, I would be stunned if he comes back to Dallas. But, like, what do you think is going on there? Like, it's hard for me to be objective because I watched him in Philly for so long. And, like, from what I saw, he was a really good player. Like, they called him when he came to Dallas, like, the Tyson Chandler starter kit. Like, that is what I've always seen for him. He's not going to be a 20-point-per-game scorer, but he has elite defensive potential. Why can't he get on the floor in Dallas? Why do they hate him so much?
Well, no, you're right. You're definitely not objective. No, I agree. I think he's just not a competitive person. Like, if you look at Carlisle's comments as well, I mean, he keeps repeating, you got to compete to keep these minutes. It's a competitive situation, and he's just not living up to it. And again, that's been kind of hinted at before.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think Noel has the best work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Might be slightly kind of a problem backstage, you know, backstage behind the scenes.
Right.
Maybe he's just not a good character guy. And we've seen that a lot. And from players who started their careers in messed up situations, which we got to admit, like in Philly,
he
got a raw deal on many levels.
Yep.
Maybe he's just so pissed off and needs to rediscover himself and his love for basketball again.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. So maybe next year when he signs with the Knicks for way too much money.
Yeah.
I mean, he rediscovers that love and then he's, you know, put to the bench because they have so many big men. I'm not sure. We'll see what happens. But I think the talent level is there.
Yeah.
It always has been. He's extremely long, extremely athletic. He moves incredibly. I think he's a better offensive player than people give him credit for. It's just, there is that one piece missing, not in his game, but maybe the mental aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't seem to be able to utilize everything he's got physically and put it into a ball game. Like, I've seen him play probably 100 times since he entered the league. And I always felt like, oh, you know, yeah, okay, you had a good game, but I was kind of expecting a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
With everything you've got going for yourself, like in terms of instincts and athleticism, all these things, I was kind of expecting just more production, better numbers, just higher impact. And maybe that's just not him. Maybe he's the type of guy who goes out there and I don't know if you get this reference, but it's Chris Washburn. Like the old from Golden State back in the day, the guy who was just like, yeah, we'll win or we'll lose, whatever.
Right.
I mean, some players just aren't wired the same way, and you know, maybe he's just not that competitive.
Yeah, it's tough to say, obviously, because we're not around the Mavericks. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean,
right.
When he was with Philly, there were definitely some whispers along those lines, and Brett Brown has even hinted about it. You know, when he came to Dallas last year, he missed that team plane, like, almost immediately, and Carlisle threw him under the bus almost immediately, and, like, said he texted Elton Brand and was like, yo, you've been mentoring this kid for 2 years? You did a shit job. Like, what's going on? So maybe, I mean, you're probably on to something, Mort. Like, it seems like there's more going on behind the scenes than we know, because based on his talent alone, you would expect him to be playing more and playing better than he is, especially on a Mavericks team that is awful and is going nowhere this year. Like, they're 2-13 right now. They already have nothing to play for. Like, they're not, I mean, it's, as you said, it's early. I guess they're not officially eliminated for playoff contention.
Oh, we, like, can say that about Dallas.
Yeah, like, yeah, they're not coming back from this. Like, they're, it's time to figure out what your go-ahead plan is. And I hate to say this, because I like, it feels wrong to make this comparison, but I'm going to do it anyway. It has a slightly Twilight Kobe feel to it, because Dirk, I love Dirk. He's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer, first ballot. He can't play anything but center anymore. And Nerlens right. needs to play center. So if you can't do Harry at the three, Dirk at the four, Nerlens at the five as your starting lineup, you're going to get blown off the court. Because Dirk is playing the five, that means Nerlens is completing with Mesri off the bench. Mesri is more in favor with Carlisle right now. Like, it feels like the best thing for this franchise moving forward would be moving Dirk to the bench, putting Nerlens in the starting lineup, letting him play off of Dennis Smith Jr. and run pick and rolls with him. Because, I mean, those two should be a lethal pick and roll combo. But at this point, like, the bridges may have been too burned already. And maybe Dallas has just said, like, there's no coming back from this. We're not going to waste our time into developing him anymore, because we know, you know, he's gone. Yeah, he's gone in 67 games. We don't care. It's just, it's a weird situation. Like, it's,
yeah,
it is not where I would have expected, you know, when he came into the league and, like, after his first season, this is not where I would have expected him to be, what, 3 years later? Like, he's not, you know, he's not one of the, like, 15 big man unicorns. He can't shoot three pointers, but he's an excellent rim protector. He has great lateral quickness. Like, he's a elite defensive prospect still. Yeah, he's got some knee issues, and concerns about that will probably limit his next paycheck. Like, Amore, you already joked about the Knicks, but, like, where do you think he actually ends up next year? Do you think he – is anyone going to give him the kind of big money long-term deal that he wants, or do you think he has to take another, like, one-year prove-it deal somewhere?
No, I think he's going to end up signing, like, a two-year deal that is going to be either very, very high – mm-hmm. in terms of monetary, because, you know, if a two-year deal is virtually nothing,
mm-hmm.
or he is going to sign, yeah, like you said, in 1 year, like, something to the tune of, I'm late on the market, so I have to sign for, like, $5 million 1 year.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to take, like, that one big page. He's not going to get a JJ Redick deal, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think some team is going to offer him big money and are expecting a commitment from him for 2 years, just because they know that he's got the potential of being better than he is, and they don't want to risk him just walking at the end of one season if he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And someone might lowball the hell out of him with a 4-year offer that's like, I don't know, $30 million.
Yeah.
I could see that. And if nothing else is on the table, he's probably going to take it. But as to which team, it's hard, because everyone in the league today seems so in tune with, you know, who guys are, like, right. mentally
yeah.
and personally.
Yeah.
And if everyone behind the scenes are going, Nerlens is not a hard worker, Nerlens is not a team player, Nerlens is not this, Nerlens is not that, then that's a career destroyer for him.
Yeah.
So because of that, obviously the Bulls, because they don't know. I mean, they don't have any incel on anything, so that makes sense.
They're already going to have Okafor, though. You don't want to reunite Okafor and Noel again.
Obviously not, but it's the Bulls, so.
That's true. I don't think he's getting a big money offer at all. Like, I just, unless he turns it around these next couple months, I just don't know. You know, Carlisle is a well-respected coach around the league. I think teams are going to see what's happening with Nerlens, and they're going to be wondering what's going on behind the scenes, and that's going to scare them off from offering like a 3-year. I mean, the 4-year $70 million that he turned down is gone. Like, he will be lucky to get half of that, I think. It would not surprise me if he has to take the mid-level exception from somewhere. In which case, like, imagine him on Golden State, or imagine him in Boston. Like, he's a Boston native.
Oh, you're thinking he's going to have, like, a JaVale McGee career?
I don't know. I mean, I hope not. But, if they're willing to give him the taxpayer mid-level exception.
Right, but that's a JaVale thing. Like, he's getting minimum deals despite posting ridiculous numbers and having, a tremendous impact, but it's structured impact, if you know what I mean.
Right,
like, there are certain things that he can't do, and that's why he doesn't play a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
So in that sense, that could be interesting. Like, maybe that's the thing for Noel. Like, you're not going to be paid well, but we are going to make sure that you succeed within this very minor, smallish role, and that's going to be your future. And if you don't like it, learn Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really fascinated to see what happens with him next, because I guess I shouldn't be surprised with how poorly this is going based on Carlisle's immediate reaction to him last summer and this whole contract thing, but it's still just there's a talented player in there. I just can't believe he's going this much to waste.
Oh, shit, I know where he should land.
Where?
Washington.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, that'd be good. That'd be really good.
That would be a great destination, because Marcin Gortat is getting older.
Right.
And if you put him at the center spot, like, age-wise, he fits with Bradley Beal and John Wall.
Yeah. Damn, yeah. And Wall would be a great pick-and-roll guy with him, too.
Yeah, if they get him for cheap.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it'll all come down to what he wants next. Like, is he willing to sacrifice more money and go to a team that is willing to, you know, or that will put him in a position to succeed? Or does he not care, and does he just want the money and then it's going to go? I don't even know who's going to offer him the money, though.
Someone is, like Vivek Ranadive or someone.
He's got 15 centers already. Why does he need another one? I guess if, like, DeAndre Jordan leaves...
Why did he draft 15 centers when he had DeMarcus Cousins?
Fair point. I guess DeAndre Jordan's a free agent, right? I guess if he leaves, or he can be, if he leaves the Clippers, maybe put Nerlens next to Blake?
I like my Washington deal a lot more.
Yeah, I do too. That would be a fun one. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there.
So let me ask you this. Do you think he ever will live up to the potential that he had coming in?
I mean, I guess it depends on, again, like, what's going on behind the scenes. It seems like he got some bad advice this summer. Like, he should have taken 4 years, $70 million. Maybe he just doesn't like playing for Carlisle, and he wanted more money for that.
Or didn't like money because $70 million.
Yeah, but I mean, I think in the right situation he will. Whether he ever turns into like the next Tyson Chandler really depends on where he ends up next and if it's on a winning team or if he really just goes and chases money because he gave up so much this year. I try to be cautiously optimistic about, especially about young players, and I just want nothing but the best for them, because the league is more fun when there's more talented players in there, and Nerlens is a talented player who deserves to play in the NBA for a long time. Like, he's proven that he can be that type of 10-year player. So,
unless it's Lonzo Ball, by the way.
We'll get there in a second. I mean, I guess the Lakers would be an option if this, you know, the Paul George, LeBron super team idea dies and Brooke Lopez goes elsewhere. They're going to need the center. That could be interesting.
Yeah, can we just talk about that very briefly?
Just about the Lakers?
We can whisper this so Lakers fans can't hear it.
Oh, yeah.
Can we not say already that LeBron-Paul George thing is not happening? Can't we just...
I'm not going to rule it out until it's
really
down in the water.
You no, aren't?
Nope. I mean...
Like, do you see this scenario actually playing out?
I mean... For basketball reasons, no. But LeBron has very clearly made, you know, he's pivoting toward his post-basketball life. And if he's really, like, if 50% of his motivation is, like, I'm just going to move to L.A., set up my entertainment mogul business, and then, like, yeah, I'll also play basketball, too, then maybe. But... So I guess let's seg into that, because we have... two things to talk about quickly with the Lakers. One, if you haven't seen it, Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report posted a really interesting column this week, about how the Lakers could clear up the cap space to make room for a George and a LeBron. And, you know, obviously, like, get rid of Julius Randle, get rid of Jordan Clarkson's one option. You're still going to have to deal with Luol Deng, though. So his idea is... give Deng an extension with a very small amount of money guaranteed. Like he said, $3 million or so. Give him a 3-year extension, then use the stretch provision on him. But instead of having to stretch him over 5 years for something like $7.4 million, you can stretch him over 11 years for just over $3 million. You clear up $4 million in cap space. Then at that point, you have a little bit more flexibility in terms of signing both of those guys. So what do you think about that, Moore? Do you think it's a road they actually might go down?
I think Lakers fans are going to be so happy to every year before their season starts when they go on salary sites on the internet. And they see Luol Deng's name there for 11 straight years, not even counting the 2 years he's already played there now.
Right, in 2027, Luol Deng is still getting a $3 million salary for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, when he's 42. Yeah. I would just love that.
Yeah.
That would just be so amazing just to see his name on a salary cap sheet for so long. But it's a brilliant idea Eric got.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth mentioning that $3.3 million, you know, it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but it's a fraction of the salary cap because it's so high right now. Like, it would be a problem if the cap declined.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm going with this, because ESPN is sort of in trouble, right?
Yeah.
Losing a lot of subscriptions and whatnot. So when the next TV deal is up, the league might not get $24 billion over 9 years again.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, you know, then I would be careful about these type of deals. Because let's assume the Lakers do it. Then you will have like 10 copycat teams around the league going, oh, that's clever. Let's do that. And then suddenly you have a shit ton of NBA team that just have stretched these guys for like 11 years. And then if the new TV deal goes down or whatever, then you're certainly looking at a cap situation. And then $3.3 million looks just a little bit more expensive than would under the current circumstances.
Yeah.
But again, it shouldn't be a deal breaker. I will say this, Jan Mahimi in that same situation.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I like that.
Right.
I like that.
We expressed concern about the Wizards not having cap space now that Wall is signed to the Supermax and Beal and Otto both deservingly on max contracts as well. So once Gortat and Markieff Morris expire, I believe both of them are in 2019, it's going to be tricky for them to replace those two guys. But yeah, Mahimi.
Yep.
If he, I mean, yeah, I think you're right, just in general, that like this idea is so creative that, you know, unless the next CBA includes an amnesty, like this might be the way around it.
Yep.
The question is whether the NBA will allow it. So Eric talked to Larry Kuhn of the CBA FAQ, and Larry basically said, like, if they included no guaranteed money, there's no way. Like, the NBA will just call that CBA circumvention, and they'll kill that deal. But there is a sweet spot between having to guarantee however much of the, like, you know, the entire extension, because the Lakers obviously mm-hmm. don't want to do that. That comes as no benefit to them. And then guaranteeing none of it. So whether $3 million is that sweet spot or if it's more would remain to be seen. We'd have to see if the Lakers go down that path and if the NBA allowed it. But I wanted to at least shout him out. And for Lakers fans out there who haven't read the article, you should go check it out, because it's at least, you know, a look into some of the options you guys have this coming summer as you try to carve out this 2-max cap sheet bonanza, whatever the hell they're planning on doing. But more, I sense your skepticism about this plan in general. Is that mostly tied to Lonzo at this point?
Oh, with the Lakers? Yeah. No. It's not Lonzo specifically. It's just the team is, I don't want to use the words in disarray, but you're going to, you know, lose Julius Randle because he's a necessary victim if you want to get either LeBron or Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good player. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to lose him for nothing.
Yep.
So, okay, that's one good player out. We're not sure if Lonzo is good or not. Like, let's be honest. I know he's had a horrible start to his NBA career.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know if he's, you know, he's probably going to get better. Or he's undoubtedly going to get better. But to what degree, we don't know.
Right.
Like, we can't sit here and go, oh, Lonzo is definitely going to be good in 2 years.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. Jordan Clarkson is pretty much a finished product. So the key issue here is Brandon Ingram. Like, how good is he going to be? And they also have to, they will have to cut Subac as well. So there's another youngster that you might have to, you know, just let go away for nothing. So what does this come down to? Larry Nance and Brandon Ingram as the supporting cast?
And Kuzma. Don't forget Kuzma.
Oh, Kuzma. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. And that's a very essential point, actually.
Yeah.
But fine, with Kuzma, and that's granted significant.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, LeBron. Hi, Paul George. Right. We have Kyle Kuzma. We have Lonzo Ball. We have Jordan Clarkson. And we have Brandon Ingram. Ta-da!
Right. Yeah.
What?
Is that team beating the Warriors next year, even with Paul George and LeBron?
Is that team beating the Raptors next year?
Well, they have to go through the Warriors to even get to the Raptors.
No, I'm just saying, right. that's not a strong team. Like, obviously, LeBron and Paul George are going to make it terrific.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to increase it, but they need help. Like, okay, let's talk about this for a minute. Look at the amount of help LeBron's had over the last few years. And I'm not downplaying LeBron by any stretch of the imagination.
But he had two All-Stars the whole time.
Two All-Stars, you know, future Hall of Famers off the bench.
Yeah.
And now he has like a former MVP who's going to be the new backup point guard when Isaiah Thomas returns.
Yep.
Who is an MVP candidate himself.
Yep.
Like, LeBron has a lot of help around him.
Yeah.
More so than any, you know, major star. So going from that to Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and like Larry Nance. Come on.
Yeah, and like that's not to say those guys won't get to that point eventually, but like, yeah, I mean, right now to beat a Warriors team with four perennial All-Stars and four future Hall of Famers and a Finals MVP coming off the bench, you can't be the, like, you need a big three, basically, which is OKC's reason they traded for Carmelo Anthony. Like, they knew Westbrook and Paul George alone were not going to get it done. So, yeah, I mean, like, if Paul George and LeBron both go to the Lakers, you're still missing that third piece of the big three. Ingram has been playing well. Like, I think the concerns about him being a total bust are now put to rest. Like, he was one of the main reasons they stayed competitive against the Sixers the other night. He had a career night. It just got overshadowed by Joel Embiid. Kuzma, you know, like, we make fun of Lakers fans for being so hyped about Kuzma, but, like, Kuzma came into the league ready to play. Like, he looks like both him and Nance look like late first-round steals. They look like legit rotation players. You know, they're in good shape at the power forward spot. Lonzo is the question mark. If they were ready to bail on Brandon Ingram after his rookie year, I guess that's the reason. Like, if a Lakers prospect comes in the league and doesn't immediately dominate, you're just ready to bail on him, which, whatever. Like, Lonzo is not going to shoot this poorly his entire career. Magic recently said, look, we're not going to tweak his shot this year, but if he keeps shooting this poorly over the offseason, we'll, you know, meet with him and kind of figure out, like, hey, you shot, you know, you're shooting 30% from the field, 23% from three. Like, maybe we need to try something else. I think it sucks that Voldemort has really overshadowed Lonzo and, like, kind of forced this much attention on him as he's struggling early in his career. But from everything we've heard about Lonzo himself, he's quiet, humble, hardworking. Like, he's going to get better. I'm still not concerned about him being a total bust. Do I think he's going to be the next Magic Johnson? No, I do not. But, like, I think he will be a fine NBA player. Is he enough to attract LeBron and Paul George on his own next year? No. But there, you know, that duty mostly falls to Magic Johnson and the allure of LA. So, this whole plan, they've been doing this plan every year for the last 5 years, and it always falls to shit. So would I be surprised if it once again does next year? No. But
no.
It seems like there's more smoke, or there was at least, you know, over the off season about this than usual. So, like, that makes me think there's a little bit more substance to these rumors than, you know, we're going to get LaMarcus Aldridge, even though he has no interest in coming here. Paul George is an LA guy. LeBron, again, like, wants to be basically the next Magic. There are off-court interests that we have to keep in mind with both of those guys, but would it surprise me if both of them don't come? No. But, like, I'm sure they have the Lakers. I'm sure they have a plan B. Like, you have KCP, Brook Lopez, who you can re-sign. Again, Nerlens is going to be floating out there. Like, there will be other options. So I'm not saying the Lakers are totally screwed either, even if their, you know, superstar plan A falls through. They got Boogie too. Like, Boogie's going to be a free agent. If the Pelicans can't keep him, you know, that'd be an interesting fit.
All right, let me ask you this. In terms of age and fit and, you know, age structure for an NBA team, would you then rather have Paul George and DeMarcus moving forward than Paul George and LeBron? Like, even from a positional standpoint as well, it meshes better.
It's so dumb, because it's like, how are you going to say no to LeBron James? Like, am I really going to do it again? Yeah, I know. And it's a fair question. Because, again, like, you have Kuzma and you have Nance, both of whom are good and both of whom are primarily fours. So if you add Bron and Paul George, like, I guess you could do, like, the Celtics interpositional thing where, like, you're playing a 6'8 guy at the nominal two spot. But, and then, again, are you, like, are you going to say no to LeBron James because Kyle Kuzma is playing well as a rookie? Probably not. but that, like, Boogie is playing out of his goddamn mind with the Pelicans right now. So, and, you know, I think you probably have to just get LeBron because you're the Lakers and, like, the marketing opportunities alone there, you know. That said, would you do LeBron and Boogie over LeBron and Paul George?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it's the other way around that I'm more curious about.
Yeah.
Because I think Boogie is just so underrated at this point.
Yeah.
He is tremendous. And if you could, you could trot out a lineup with Bookie, Kuzma, Paul George, and then with Ingram as like a super sub.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just, I guess, Jordan Clarkson at the two. And then Lonzo at the one, where every load of pressure would be on the other four starters. Yeah. Like, he would, there would be no pressure on Lonzo whatsoever.
Or you could even do Ingram at the two.
Oh, shit. Then you're going, you know, now you're going the route that you always hate, with big players going to smaller positions.
But that seems to be what they're, like, that's the new wave. That's what Boston is ushering in.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I just don't think it works. And I don't want to see this become a thing, because when the Knicks start Kristaps Porzingis at small forward, I'm going to freak out.
No, I don't think you could do it with, aside from Ben Simmons and Giannis, like, you can't do it with, like, a 7-footer at point guard, but like, or like, you know, a 7'2" guy, you're not playing him at small forward. But I think there's less harm when it's a 6'8" guy playing him between the two and the four. Like, that's what, you know, Boston has Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, all of whom are 6'8", 6'9", all of whom are being used rather interchangeably on offense. Like, there's less harm there. So if it's Brandon Ingram, Paul George, and Kyle Kuzma or Larry Nance, you know, you're going to have Kuzma or Nance be the nominal four. But if it's George and Ingram playing interchangeably on offense, I don't think that's a huge concern. The reason I go LeBron, why I prefer LeBron, is because I think Lonzo, I've seen this from Lakers people. They're saying, like, it would almost help Lonzo if he could play off ball more. Like, if he didn't have the ball handling responsibility every single time down the floor, and he can, like, be used more as a cutter and get some more easy opportunities, and he doesn't have to create offense for himself, which he is struggling with. So having Bron in that role and having Lonzo play off of him, you know, that probably makes things easier on Lonzo. Whether it leads to a championship, probably not. So in that sense, you know, because I want LeBron to be competing for titles every year until he retires, I guess I would, for that reason, I would want Paul George at DeMarcus. But it's a fair question. So are you on, you would rather have Paul George at DeMarcus than Paul George and LeBron in LA next year?
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
Yeah, that's tricky.
I mean, and again, here's the thing. We always underrate DeMarcus Cousins. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Because of, you know, the flare-ups in Sacramento and whatnot. Like, look, we have been going on a Giannis spree lately. Mm-hmm. Justified, don't worry. Right. But look, heads up. DeMarcus is averaging 28 points, 14 rebounds, 6 assists, almost 2 steals, 1.5 blocks, and he's draining damn near 3 triples a game at the center position. Have mercy.
Yeah.
He is so talented. It's unreal. And this was lost in Sacramento for so many years because, oh, let's put the headline in DeMarcus Cousins gets ejected. No, no. He's a terrific basketball player. He is clearly worth like a super max if it came to that. It doesn't now because he was traded, but like, this guy is no joke. And he's, what, 27, I want to say? Yeah, 27. In a somewhat recent 27, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I had to write the B-ball breakdown profile for him in the top 50, and I think we had him 27th as a staff, which is absurd. Like, just totally, totally absurd. So, yeah, like, he's a top 20 player in the NBA. There's no question about that. Like, what he's doing, I guess they're flying somewhat under the radar because there's just so much other stuff happening in the NBA right now. But, like, he and Brown are playing incredibly well. So, frankly, I hope he stays in New Orleans because I just want to see that combination and see if they can actually put the right pieces around them.
I'll tell you something. When I was a Bulls fan, Boogie,
back in
January, when I was a Bulls fan, that was the one guy I wanted next to Jimmy Butler. That was Boogie.
Yeah,
like, everyone threw out all of these names, but like, Bookie was so far ahead from, you know, from my perspective, than anyone else who was in play as a trade candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, if you're going to get anyone, it should be Bookie, because him and Jimmy Butler in the pick and roll,
mm-hmm.
forget about it. Just load them up with shooters. Just go get Seth Curry or whatever. That's partly why I also wanted Seth Curry, because he had a rapport with Cousins. And he came cheaply, as I mentioned, Bulls. Yeah. So, but, right. I too would love to see him stay in New Orleans. And I would love to see New Orleans, you know, get a couple picks in where they get a guy who can actually play and maybe surprises a little bit, because they don't have money to upgrade. So if they get some guy in the draft who surprises, oh, good Lord, I would love that so much.
So we actually have a little bit of breaking news to talk about before we hit our crush of the week. Memphis has just declared Mike Conley is going to be out for at least the next 2 weeks on treatment for his heel and Achilles.
Yeah. Damn.
So Memphis, you know, started the season really hot. They've now fallen back to 7-7. I'm going to ask the same question about them that I did about the Jazz. How in trouble are the Grizzlies?
Well, they're a little bit in trouble because Mike Conley is almost a god, but it's only 2 weeks, so...
At least 2 weeks.
Oh, it's at least.
Yeah.
So that could be a right. Yeah, that could be more.
Yeah, it could be... I mean, he's like RoboCop. Like, he broke two bones in his back and he came back within 2 weeks last year. So,
yeah,
you know, he might come back, but.
I mean, thank God for Tyreek Evans. Yeah. That's a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, look, they have Ben McLemore is healthy now, so he's going to be playing and he's getting into the swing of things. So when he gets a little bit more adjusted to it, mm-hmm. then maybe he's able to take over some shots.
Right.
I think Memphis has the type of internal structure and culture that could survive such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, the West is loaded.
Yeah.
And if you know, the rest of the West teams are going to find their strides, which they will anytime soon, because now we're into that part of the season where teams are starting to figure themselves out a little bit,
mm-hmm.
then this could really punish them. Marcus Gasol has to score 30 a night now, which I'm looking kind of forward to.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
selfish Marcus Gasol is the best Marcus Gasol.
It really is. Oh, he erupted against Indiana the other night, which was really fun. But they're aside from, they have Dallas this coming Wednesday and then Brooklyn next Sunday. But aside from that, their next couple games are Houston, Portland, Denver, two against the Spurs, Cavs, Minnesota, Knicks, Raptors, Thunder. That's a brutal stretch to be without Mike Conley. Like, again, it's early. Hopefully he's back quickly. Hopefully this two-week thing really only turns out to be 2 weeks, but it's looking like, you know, after that first few weeks of the season when they were 5-1, all of us were like, oh, wow, all right, I guess Memphis is going to be in the playoffs. Never doubt Memphis. And then,
yeah,
you know, I like, hell, and I said a couple weeks ago, like, all it takes is one Conley or Gasol injury and the whole thing falls apart. And then I was like, well, that's probably true for every team. But unfortunately, we're about to see that with Memphis. So we'll see how they survive this next stretch. But I'm nervous.
It's definitely the worst kind of news coming out of Memphis. They could easily survive like a rotation player. It's just not one of those two guys, as you mentioned, because there's so much responsibility on those two. And that's partly why this is going to be interesting as well, because now you have Tyreek Evans. Like, we've been lauding his play all year long, rightfully so. He's been amazing. If he is able to actually step up in Conley's, you know, lack of presence and keep delivering these amazing games night in and night out,
mm-hmm.
then he's damn sure going to be a Memphis Grizzly for a long time, because that organization remembers that type of play.
That's true.
And, I mean, that would solidify him in that core, which would be very, very interesting. But they've needed a third guy for a long time.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, Chandler Parsons played a season high number of minutes the other night. Maybe he gets going a little bit more, but
oh, that would be wonderful for him. He deserves it. Oh, good Lord, that was one rough year last year.
Yeah. So fingers crossed for Mike Conley. Prayers up that he gets better soon and that we we see him back on the court shortly. Mort, let's wrap things up with our crush of the week. Have you settled upon a guy yet?
I have settled upon a guy. And for those who don't know, I was kind of torn because I didn't think we had this one guy this week who just did work. But I am going to go with Rodney Hood.
Nice. It's a good one.
Yeah. Yep. That was a good one because he's been erupting a little bit off the bench. He's averaging a team high 16.8 points, and that's just in less than 28 minutes a game. He's shooting under 40% from the field overall, but a lot of his shots are threes, where he's also shooting just under 40%, 95% from the line. He just seems to be working into that role that we talked about a lot during the summer, that he has to be the de facto scorer now.
Mm-hmm.
So he seems a little bit more secure with himself, with the basketball, in terms of how he chases shots and where he gets them. So Rodney Hood for now. I'm still skeptical about whether or not he's going to be this guy who can take over.
Yeah.
But I like what I'm seeing so far. I would like to see him rebound a little bit more, though.
Yeah. Did it hurt you to nominate a Jazz player that wasn't Donovan Mitchell?
Physically,
All right. Well, I'm going with TJ Warren this week. You know, last year he got off to a hot start, suffered a head injury, never really bounced back from that. This year, over his last 12 games, almost 21 points a night on 52.2% shooting, more than 6 rebounds, the occasional assist, steal, block. I mean, yes, the Suns are terrible, but this guy, you know, Devin Booker is not the only reason to watch the Suns. TJ Warren is really balling out. He had 40-point, 10-rebound game against Washington and a win at the start of November against the Timberwolves the other night. I believe both he and Booker had 35 plus each, which...
Right, yeah. Yeah. They did.
So, I mean, you know, again, the Suns are terrible. They're going to be in the lottery. They're going to be high in the lottery. But they've got some, like, they're not as far away as their record is probably going to suggest this year. Like, they have some young pieces. Marquise Chris is an anti-crush right now. I don't know what the hell. Hopefully he gets it going soon. But at least
sophomore slump.
Yeah, but at least TJ is playing well.
Well, and remember, we had talked about TJ and kind of we've been waiting for this.
Yeah,
because he was too good of a scorer at North Carolina State.
Yep. Yep.
And now it's finally come to fruition. Like 18.5 points a game, 6 boards on the season in just 29 minutes. I mean, he's not a 3-point shooter. But I am not going to be the one who says that he can't develop that shot.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, super small sample, but in 2015-16, he shot 40% on 70 attempts. I mean,
yeah,
he's at least proven somewhat capable of hitting it. I mean, he's 2 of 20 this year, which is not great. But again, like, look at his point guard play. Look at who else do opponents have to worry about defending aside from Devin Booker. Like,
right,
give him a real point guard, put real teammates around him. Yeah, you know,
I would like to see TJ as kind of a small ball four once.
Me too. Yeah. Unfortunately, they have 7 other big men.
Yeah. But, hi, Greg Monroe, yeah, who did well. Yeah. But, oh, did, my God, why do we need you?
Right. Yeah. He did play well last night against the Rockets, but they also got 142 points dropped on them. So.
The Suns.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for this week on the NBA podcast. Thank you again all for listening to us. You can find us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find all of our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. And I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm going to go cry realizing this is the first episode without Sarah. So.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
We miss you already, Sarah. All right. Take care, Mort.
You too, man.